Hello, and welcome to the Write Club podcast, where we take you behind the pages and into the fascinating world of writing. I'm Mary, and this is Beth, and we're part of the team at Writing Magazine and Writers Online. Hi, Beth, how are you?
Hiya, yeah, really good, thank you. Very excited about our guest this week. Amanda Marples is a mental health professional, mentor, and published writer. She's also the creator of Reconcile Creative, a mentoring service for neurodiverse writers like herself.
Hello, Amanda. Where are we speaking to you from today?
Hello. So I am in Rotherham, up north in the UK, just right next to Sheffield.
Is that your writing space, or have you just found a quiet place?
Where I'm sat now, it's one of my writing places. I don't really have a specific writing place, but I probably do the majority of my work here. Yeah, I'd say so.
Amazing. Have you always wanted to be a writer?
I have always wanted to be a writer, but, and I think given I have ADHD, and I think given my history, it took me a long time to put the wheels sufficiently in motion to organise myself enough to be able to write in a consistent way. But yeah, from being really, really young, I was very, very interested in words and writing. I did lots and lots of kept endless diaries as a child. I wrote a lot of letters to friends, and my diaries got increasingly morbid as I got into my teenage years. I wrote a lot of poetry, again, pretty morbid, pretty miserable poetry in my teens. Did a lot of that, but found it very difficult to put stories together, which we can probably get into a bit more if you want to. I always really wanted to, but I had an incredibly loud inner critic, which it took me many, many years to learn how to circumvent that, and even to, well, to understand what it even was. And I guess to become aware of it actually as well. It took me a long time to kind of figure out that there was this thing in my mind telling me not to write because I couldn't do it, or nobody would like it, or whatever. So yeah, it took a long time to kind of filter through into my awareness, and then even longer to learn how to kind of get around that. So yeah, it took me a long time. So yes, I've always wanted to write, imagined myself as a writer, did a lot of fantasizing about being a writer when I was very little. I had this kind of idyllic image of myself as a writer. But didn't really start writing properly, probably until I was in my early 30s, and I'm 46 now. So probably the last 15 years I've been writing.
And why do you think you had that idea to become a writer? Were you a big reader? Was it from that or?
Yes, I think that is probably where it came from, actually. I read loads as a child, and I had a very rich fantasy life, I guess, as well. And that's something I've learned a lot more about as I've kind of looked into neurodiversity and learned more about myself and the way that my mind works. Something that often people that are on the spectrum, it's not something that you can be diagnosed with, but there's something called maladaptive daydreaming. I don't really like the term maladaptive because actually, for me, it was quite a protective thing. But I spent a huge amount of time in a daydream fantasy type world, very much fueled by the kind of material that I was reading. So I read lots of Enid Blyton and all the classics, lots of Enid Blyton and lots of Roald Dahl, but also I loved fantasy, and I loved Alan Garner, who was probably my favourite. And there were a couple of his books, one in particular called The Weird Stone of Brisingamen, that I just read over and over and over and over again. So that very much kind of fed into my imaginary worlds that I used to build for myself, and they were worlds that I would rather be in than the real one. And I don't think much has changed, really. I probably don't spend quite as much time in imaginary worlds as I used to, but it's still there. So yes, so that's a very convoluted way of answering that question. Yes, I read an awful lot. I very much used to escape into books. As a child, it's the ultimate escapism, isn't it, really? They just come perfect enclosed worlds, and nobody can disturb you.
100%. I think that's sort of a common theme through all the people that we're talking to, is that people that write read. And it's really interesting to kind of hear that side of people. But I mean, last year I know you ran a lot of webinars through Ryan Magazine, and I was quite grateful to be on some of them. I was actually and being able to watch them because the way you present is really fascinating, and the information you were giving out I thought was really, really interesting. So they were full of advice for like neurodiverse and neurotypical writers on topics such as procrastination, time management, handling rejection, etc. How did it go, and do you enjoy running those?
I love running those. I love running that series in particular. I thought it went really well. They were really well attended. People seemed to really enjoy and relate to the material. And that's really what drives me to produce the kind of courses that I produce. It's all the material that I wish that I had known years ago. And I think had I known the things that I know now, partly through just bitter experience and just trying different things and learning more about myself, but also just, my professional experience and the things that I've picked up in my training and things like that. I do think often that if I'd had that information years ago, I might have been in a different place now. And that's a really, really common thing that I hear from other neurodivergent writers, actually feeling like they are behind all of their peers. In fact, there is research about that, about neurodivergent people being behind the curve financially, professionally, in relationships, all sorts of domains. So I really love sharing what I know. One of the things that's kind of a tagline, I suppose, in my, when I'm delivering these webinars, I always say at the beginning, you might remember actually, from those sessions, I always say at the beginning, I wish I'd known this years ago. I can't remember what it is that I say actually. Something along those lines anyway. Because it felt very hopeless for me for a long time. It just felt like, I wanted to write. I felt like I was a writer. I felt like that's what I should be doing, but just did not have the skills or the tools to be able to get past my own brain to get onto the page, really. And some of the strategies and techniques are really, easy to apply, but you don't know what you don't know. So what I want to do is share it with other people because I don't want anybody else to waste any time.
Yeah,
That was this
100%.
phrase that I was looking for. That's what I say at the beginning.
Yeah.
I've wasted a lot of time. I don't want that for anyone else.
Yeah, definitely. And I can see from those webinars and that entire series really that it's so lovely seeing the people in the chat putting all their lovely comments in. I think there was actually a couple of occasions where towards the end when everyone was saying thank you, it was almost like bringing you to tears because everyone was being so lovely. So it just goes to show that they do really help people.
Yeah, definitely. It does nearly bring me to tears. I mean, I'm a very, very emotionally dysregulated kind of person anyway. It doesn't take much to make me cry. But I love the community. I love how open people are to listening to new ideas. And I'm always just blown away that people want to come and listen to me talk about this. It's never not an honor. I've run these web, this series a number of times now. In fact, I'm starting them again on Sunday in person in Sheffield, through the writers' workshop, who I work with. I'm an associate with them in Sheffield. They are fantastic. So I'm running them again, and I can't wait. I mean, I'm always really nervous, which is completely normal, but it's just brilliant, and I really enjoy watching people kind of. I like watching pennies drop in other people's minds when they realise that thing that they've been doing, A, is something that lots of people do, so it's not just them, which I think that in and of itself is really healing. And also that there are solutions. I think that's so important because it's very easy to lose hope, especially if you've been trying for years and not managing to get on to finish that story or to even have any kind of a regular writing routine. It can be absolutely soul-destroying when you feel like that's what you've been put here to do, but yet you can't do it. That's a really, really difficult place to be. And there's not an awful lot of, not a huge amount of advice for neurodivergent writers, for writers that are ADHD, dyslexic, Tourette syndrome, autistic. And the standard advice tends not to work too well for us. It needs to be adapted and tweaked for neurodivergent brains. I think that's been my experience. Because before I decided to start pulling all this stuff together, I'd done a number of webinars and taken any number of classes, to try to figure out, how to manage my time, how to focus my writing. And I just could not apply these strategies. I just couldn't do it, which just served to make me feel worse, really, and, took me further away from doing what I wanted to do. So, yes, that's another very long-winded way of saying, yes, I really enjoy running those sessions.
Saying about feeling like you were meant to write, what is it about writing that lights you up? What excites you about it?
This is a really difficult question to answer because it's not something that I can readily put my finger on. I just know that when I have got past myself, because I'm frequently in my own way, because I think that's an important thing to say as well. Just go off a slight tangent here. Some of these, the typical things that we struggle with as neurodivergent writers, whether it is focus and concentration or hyperfocus or difficulties with imagination or difficulties with managing time blindness, stuff like that. With the best will in the world and the best treatment in the world, these things are not going to go away. They're always going to be there. And that's part of what I've really had to accept about myself. Instead of shaking my fist at the sky, constantly yelling, "Why am I like this?" I've had to just accept that I just am like this. This is just the way that I am. So this stuff continues to come up for me. So, my process of trying to get onto the page involves me trying to get past myself, really, trying to get past my brain, trying to get past the barriers that I've got. And that can take quite a lot of energy up and can be really frustrating. And I'll be honest, there are days when I don't manage it. I don't write consistently every single day. Because I just can't, some days are really difficult, which I guess is true for anybody, but I think for people that are struggling with, certain conditions, it can be even harder. But once I've done that, once I have got past myself and I'm onto the page and I'm into a flow of writing, there is just no better feeling for me. And I think most writers would probably agree with that. Not to say that writing isn't also really hard work, and it is sometimes just, I think Stephen King, does he call it shoveling dirt or something like that? There's an awful lot of graft involved in writing, and it can feel like a slog, especially if you're, trying to get to the end of a first draft or something like that. It's incredibly hard work, but when you get into a flow state, it is just the best feeling. Because for me, as an ADHD woman as well, that flow state means my head finally shuts up, and I've got some peace and I'm just in a creative space. And it's just, and I imagine, if I'm sure if I had an MRI scan while I were in that flow state, I'm sure all my dopamine systems and reward systems are lighting up and going absolutely nuts. And obviously, for people that are ADHD and also autistic as well, when we're dopamine depleted, for us, when we're in that flow state, it's like medicine, So yes, that's primarily, I would say, what I love most about writing is just being in that purely creative flow.
Lovely. We know you at Writing Magazine from winning quite a few of our competitions, the short story competitions, and you've won lots of competitions elsewhere as well. What is it about short stories that you particularly like?
I love a short story. It's interesting because when I, going back to when I were younger and seeing myself as a writer, I saw myself as a novelist. Before I'd even started doing any writing, I saw myself as, making these, sprawling novels, multiple books in a series. That's what how I saw myself. And I think that's probably because that's the, if people say I'm a writer, that's kind of the stereotype. People say writer, they think novelist. So I think that was just what I expected that would be what that would look like. But actually, and I never even thought about writing short stories until I can't even remember when it happened, really. I think I might even have started with Flash. But in any case, what I like about it feels to me very much like, because I like analogies. Writing a novel, and I have written novels, I've not published any yet, but I've got novels that I've written. Writing a novel is like, it's like a marriage, it's like a long-term relationship. It takes hard work, it takes commitment. There are long periods of time often spells when it feels like it's just not working. You want to abandon it, you want to walk away from it. And it's, and it's tough, and you feel like you're not going to survive it, and all of that stuff. Whereas a short story to me feels like a snog in the dark down an alleyway. It's done and dusted, it's exciting, it happens quickly, and then it's finished. And I really like that. As an ADHD writer, starting is really difficult, but finishing is really difficult as well. And the bigger the piece of work, the harder it is to finish. Whereas a short story, I can, I can blast out a first draft. Sometimes in one session, sometimes in a couple of sessions, piece of flash fiction, I can bash out, a piece of flash fiction in an hour, maybe. That really suits my brain. And I didn't realize that until I started to do it, and I realized how much I, just like the sense of completeness that you get from being able to write a short story. And the other thing for me as well about short stories is that I don't have to concern myself too much with plotting. I can very much, pants my way through a short story. I can just start with an idea and let the story tell itself, and then it finishes however it finishes, and I don't need to worry too much and start overthinking it, because that is the enemy, I would say, of all, probably all writers, full stop, never mind neurodivergent writers. But overthinking your plot can just really get in the way of actually getting words down. So yeah, I just like the brevity of it, really, the fact that I can just get it done, and it's satisfying, and it's done. I'll get lots of dopamine from that.
They're satisfying to read as well, aren't they? Short stories. I absolutely love a short story.
Yes, they are. I love collections of short stories. There's so many collections of short stories that I really love. I love, oh, I'm not gonna be able to think of a name now. Is it Lauren Moore? I think it's Lauren Moore. Her short stories are brilliant. Yeah, there's lots of people that I could name. Stephen King's short stories also are absolutely brilliant. In fact, I enjoy his short stories more than I enjoy his novels.
Not sure I've read any of his.
Oh, they're
I'm
brilliant.
going to go
He's
to. Yeah.
very, very good at short stories.
Had to
Really
add them
good.
to the list. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's done quite a lot of collections as well. So there's lots to go on.
Brilliant.
Oh, amazing. And have you had any sort of like being a writer, any sort of insights that led you to create your mentoring service and the webinar series? Anything specific that's kind of happened to you as a neurodiverse writer?
No, I think it was more a slow dawning and realization that this kind of coming together of realizing and getting diagnosed with ADHD, and starting to come to terms with that, and then learning more about that. I also, I work with a lot of in the day job, because I still work a day job. I work for a university as an academic mentor. And do so I work with neurodivergent students all day, every day. That's my bread and butter. I've been doing that for a long time, and I was a social worker in mental health services for many, many years in the NHS before that. So all that kind of knowledge that I've acquired over the years kind of came together with me starting to write around 15 years ago, and then getting my diagnosis, which would have been 3 years ago, I think now. And it all just kind of came together. It just this dawning that this is stuff that I could, once I started learning what works for me, and learning what works for the students that I work with as well, I just realised that I could bring all of this together and offer this as a service to other people, to reach as many people as possible, because I feel quite, passionately about the fact that, we're on a very uneven playing field. Quite often, neurodiversity, there are statistics about this. Don't ask me to quote them, because I can't think of any off the top of my head. But there are, there is a triad, I guess, of like a big Venn diagram, if you like, of neurodiversity, poverty, trauma, mental illness, ill health. All of those things come together and converge to hold people back. So I very much feel like the neurodivergent voice is often missing from the arts, because A, we don't have the correct support, we don't have the correct advice about how to get stuff done, and we're not privileged in the same way that our neurotypical counterparts might be. That might irritate some people, but I think it's true. The amount of people that I speak to, and I'm writing about this at the moment, like I touched on earlier, that are years behind because they've not been able to get going. And because they've not been able to get going, like financially, they're not where they need to be. So they've not got the resources to be able to do things like go on expensive retreats or get a writing coach or whatever it is. So, you know, that leg up that other people can often afford, neurodivergent people often cannot. And that's part of what, you know, why I really wanted to offer this service, because I know, because I've done my research, I know that my service is cheaper as well than, you know, a lot of other. Like, for example, one of the things that I do is I offer small group mentoring for neurodivergent writers. So once a month, I do one in person and I do one online. There's only five spaces available. So it's a space where people, so it's small enough for people to get really good quality advice from a professional in a setting that feels supportive and feels nurturing and has got that understanding and that sense of community. But it's a low cost because the individual ticket is not, you know, it's not a bank breaker, but, you know, I get, you know, paid what I need to get paid. And I think that really matters. I think it's really, really important. You know, I've seen so much, you know, I'm not throwing shade on anybody here, but, you know, I've, like I said, I've looked into coaching for myself because I think everybody probably needs a coach or a mentor, and it's just out of people's price range. It's out of my price range. It always has been. So this is a better way, I think, for people that can't afford one-to-one mentoring or coaching long term. They can get it at a lower cost in a small group of people, and I think that works really well. I feel really, really strongly about that, about cost.
Yeah,
Did that
100%.
answer the question? I can't even remember the question.
Yeah, it did. Well, it's kind of a similar question actually. So, can you just tell us a little bit about Reconcile Creative, what you do and how you came to set that up?
So I offer the small group mentoring. I do one-to-one coaching as well. I've got a you know, I've grown, you know, quite a number of clients over the last couple of years. Some of those people actually I see through Access to Work, which is a non-means tested benefit that people can apply for if they are in work, but and that can be self-employed work. It doesn't necessarily have to be employed. It can be self-employed. So I see some people through Access to Work. So I offer that. So I offer the small group mentoring. I run workshops, sometimes one-off workshops, sometimes in person. There's the series that I offer. I do the occasional masterclass for the Writers' Workshop in Sheffield. I offer consultancy as well. I'm just at the moment pulling together some training on trauma, which is another big area of interest for me, for an organisation. So that's something that I do as well. I can offer workplace training. And how that came about, as I said, this kind of dawning realisation that, you know, this is something that I can offer to people. I've got, you know, my experience that I can share with other writers. It involved an awful lot of hand-wringing. It involved an awful lot of trying to talk myself out of it and then trying to talk myself back into it, and a lot of a huge, huge amount of anxiety and resistance and being terrified of social media as well, which you will know about this, Bethany, because we've talked about this, haven't we, before separately. So yeah, lots of tears, a lot of tears trying to set up my website, for example. That was the first thing that I did. I bought myself a domain and I built this website, which took me forever to do because I was petrified of clicking the wrong thing and causing some kind of nuclear reaction somewhere. You know, thought that the SAS were going to come crashing through my window because I'd done the wrong thing. You know, awful. Cried most days that I'm working on that, but I eventually got over it and got that published. And then it's just built very, very incrementally. I would be lying if I said that I had a business plan. I do not. I have just done it and learned as I've gone along. I teach myself how to market. I've taught myself how to promote myself. Not something that comes easy to me. And I've just done it a bit at a time. And it's involved a lot of false starts and a lot of having to stop because I feel overwhelmed and needing to wait for a few. So it's been a slow process, you know, because I've learned that the worst thing that you can do if you're feeling burnt out is to push through. The thing to do is stop and take care of yourself and not panic that you're running out of time. I think this is, I hear this all the time. from neurodivergent writers and artists. And it's what I experience as well, this panic that if I don't do it now, I'm going to miss the boat and it's never going to happen. And I've had to learn really careful strategies to look after that when that arises and address it rather than beating myself up and trying to push through, because that just makes it worse. So yes, Reconcile Creative came together through an awful lot, literally blood, sweat and tears, and it's taken a long time, but things are going pretty well at the moment. I've got a nice client group. People come to me without me having to do an awful lot, which is fantastic. Not quite cracked social media yet, not quite got there, but I'm working on it. I'll get there eventually.
Join us next week for part two of our chat with Amanda Marples.